ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today is the March 22 session of our seminar on Srimad Bhagavatam, the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So today the theme is on understanding the terms Sat and Asat from Srimad Bhagavatam. These are very key words in Vedanta disputation with other systems of philosophy. So hopefully this session will not take so long, so that there will be time at the end for questions and answers, more time than yesterday. There were a lot of questions. So we shall begin. So the word Sat, which appears again and again and again in Vedic literature, especially the Upanishads, I think you probably all know the meaning of the word. One meaning is eternal. Another meaning is real. So, Sat, meaning eternal, eternally real, the truth. This is actually a name of Krishna, a name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As is seen in one very important verse, which we shall be discussing, from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 2, Text 26. This is a prayer offered to Lord Krishna while he was in the womb of Mother Devaki. This prayer was offered by the demigods. So I shall read it. It's a very nice prayer, and as you'll see, the word Sat appears here in the Sanskrit repeatedly. Satya Vratam Satya Param Tri Satyam Satyasya Yonim Nihitam Cha Satye Satyasya Satyam Ritta Satya Netram Satyatmakam Tvam Saranam Prapana. And that means the demigods prayed, O Lord, you never deviate from your vow, which is always perfect, because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone. Being present in the three phases of cosmic manifestation, creation, maintenance, and annihilation, you are the supreme truth. Indeed, unless one is completely truthful, one cannot achieve your favor, which is therefore which therefore cannot be achieved by hypocrites. You are the active principle, the real truth, in all the ingredients of creation, and therefore you are known as Antaryami, the inner force. You are equal to everyone, and your instructions apply for everyone for all time. You are the beginning of all truth. Therefore, offering our obeisances, we surrender unto you. Kindly give us protection. And I'll read a few sentences from the purport. Srila Prabhupada writes, the demigods or devotees know perfectly well that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the true substance, whether within this material world or in the spiritual world. Srimad Bhagavatam begins therefore with the words, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Satyam Param Dimahi. Vasudev Krishna is the Param Satyam, the Supreme Truth. So, I think we can all immediately grasp Krishna as the Sat, as the Supreme Truth, since he is Sat Chitananda Vigraha. He is of a form which is eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss, completely transcendental to the temporary manifestations of this material world. And he is the basis, the eternal basis of this material world. So this we can immediately understand. how Krishna is Sat in that sense. But there's another sense of Sat which is given in this verse. Krishna is called Satyasya Yonim. Now the word Yoni means womb, just like the womb is the source of a child, or in a more general sense, Yoni means simply the cause, the source. And so he is the source of all truth, or as Prabhupada writes in the translation, you are the beginning of all truth. Now this truth, this Sat, of which Krishna is the Yoni, the womb or the source, actually refers to this cosmic manifestation. So this cosmic manifestation is also called Sat in the Vedic scriptures. Because it is manifested from the supreme eternal Sat. Just like Srila Prabhupada, you'll find he gives this argument against the Mayavadi position. The Mayavadis say that this world is asat, it is unreal. It has no truth at all. It is, as we were saying in an earlier class, pushpakash, it is a flower in the sky, an imagination, a hallucination. It has no reality whatsoever. So Srila Prabhupada argues that this is actually an offense against Krishna. Because Krishna is the author of this material world. He is the source of this world. So if you criticize something that someone has created, you say this is unreal. This is absurd. If you could criticize that thing that a person has made, you're criticizing the person also. So Srila Prabhupada gives this nice argument that in this way, by saying that the material world is just an absurd dream, the Mayavadis are actually blaspheming Krishna. So this material world has truth, but we should remember that that truth can only be understood in relationship to Krishna, the origin. It is like this, to give an example, like paper money. You see, a nice, crispy $100 bill. Everyone around the world thinks, oh, this is very nice, $100 bill. But what is it? It's a piece of green paper. You could blow your nose on it and throw it away. It's just a piece of green paper. But why does it have value? Because the American government stands behind it. And in America, you know, there's one big military encampment called Fort Knox, where all the gold is kept. It's on an army base. So they have thousands of troops protecting the United States gold reserves, many tons of gold. So this gold, which we can say is the real true valuable thing, is backing up the paper money. The paper money, the dollars, are derived from this gold. So therefore, US dollars have value. Not in and of themselves, not this green paper. So, similarly, this material world, it can be compared to US dollars. You see? Separated. For instance, if the value is separated from the source, then it's illusion. Then there is no value. For instance, just like if we print our own dollars. Narishwar Prabhu showed me. He's the manager here. So he showed me how someone had taken he thought it was someone from Russia, took a $1 bill and made it into a $100 bill and paid their Mayapur fees with that. So, if we make our own money, then that is asat, that's unreal. It actually has no value. Similarly, the modern scientists, these glorified technologists, actually, the word, this is interesting. I'll just explain the origin of the word technology. It immediately comes from Greek. And then this Greek root, techne, is derived from a Sanskrit word. And the Sanskrit word means carpenter. And actually in Greek also, techne means, actually refers to carpenter, carpentry, woodworking. So this is a Shudra art. But in Kali Yuga, the Shudras become the Brahmanas. So technologists, technological scientists, who are nothing more than glorified carpenters, they are now the Brahmins, the leading lights of wisdom in this world today. So these technologists, their inventions, what they're doing by their inventions is simply copying material nature, copying what's already there in material nature. For instance, here you see, here in Mayapur and all over India, how agriculture is done with bulls, with oxen. But in the Western world, to use a bull, a bullock to plow your field is considered most primitive. You must have a nice, shiny tractor, you see, built in some factory somewhere in Chicago or Smolensk or somewhere, you see. And this is considered more advanced, to have a tractor. Of course, bull and tractor are doing the same thing. But the bull is actually valuable because it is given by God for that purpose. The bull is given by God within the total plan of nature. Anyway, we can talk the glories of farming with bulls, but that's not the purpose here. So, the tractor is something artificial. It actually has no real intrinsic value. Actually, we can see the tractor farming has resulted in the increase of sinful activities. For instance, because the bulls are idled by the tractors doing the work in the field, therefore people think, let us eat the bulls. So the invention of the tractor has actually promoted very horrible sinful activities, very degrading sinful activities all around the world. So this is, you see, asat. There is no real value in such a thing as a tractor. So anyway, in this way, modern society is trying to invent again what nature has already provided. Or also we see things which are provided by nature, the modern mentality places an artificial value on it. Just like I was thinking, because someone told a joke this morning. So anyway, just like in society there's man and woman, so they have their place in society given by God. But in modern time, there is an artificial value placed upon womanhood. You see, they're trying to promote women to be equal to men in every way. Now the real reason for this, as Prabhupada explained, that there are lusty men who want to exploit women. So they tell the women, oh, you're very nice, you're very intelligent, you can be independent, you can do what you like, and then we will exploit you for sex life. That's the real purpose. So, woman, man, these are creations of God, and they have their value, they have their purpose given by God in the Varnashram system. But when due to lusty desires, this original system is turned topsy-turvy. and artificial values are placed upon, for instance, womanhood, then that also is asat. That's unreal. So these two things are going on. Either things are being completely being produced that are completely artificial, or an artificial value is being placed on natural things. So this is counterfeit, like, as I said, printing paper money. So the real value of a thing can only be understood in its relationship with Sat, with Krishna. We have to understand His plan, His purpose. And then we can understand the real value of things. Another point that is explained in Bhagavatam and Vedanta of the truth of this cosmic manifestation is that the ingredient, the basic ingredient or the basic substance, which in Sanskrit is called vastu, the basic substance of this material world is real. Because the basic substance of everything is spirit. Srila Prabhupada, in a very, very interesting, illuminating conversation, explained that the basic building block of anything, whether in the spiritual world or the material world, is the spiritual atom. The spiritual spark, which is Atma Paramatma. So that is also the basic building block here in the material world. If everything is broken down, finally you come to this spiritual particle. Therefore, it is said, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. This is the quotation. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Everything is actually spirit. But these building blocks here, these building blocks of spirit here in the material world, when put together, they form this temporary manifestation instead of an eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss manifestation. It is temporary, full of ignorance, and full of suffering. Why this difference? Because as Srila Prabhupada said, here there is lack of Krishna consciousness. Here there is the basic building block, the spiritual particle, the jiva. But unfortunately, the jiva is not Krishna conscious. So therefore, when you put these non-Krishna conscious jivas together, you end up with this material world. And when Krishna conscious living entities are put together, and then that's the spiritual world. But here's the point. The basic ingredient is sat. Even in this material world. So in that sense also, the material world is real. Although the forms of this material world are temporary. This is Vaishnav philosophy. Now, philosophers of the Nyaya, Vaisheshika and Sankhya systems, they object to this. They object to the Vedantic or Bhagavata position that Krishna is Satyasya Yonim. He is the source of this cosmic manifestation. Or in other words, in terms here, he is the Upadana Karana. They object to that. So the argument they give is that this material world is imperfect. It is contaminated. It is impure. So if Krishna is the source of it, and if at the end it goes back into Krishna, or into Lord Mahavishnu, then that means that the Lord Himself is contaminated, is imperfect, by association with this imperfect creation. So therefore, their argument is that the Upadana Karana, the ingredient source, is Pradhan. Therefore, again, we come back to this dualistic conclusion that there is spirit and separate from spirit, a separate tattva is prakriti or material nature. So the ultimate truth is actually two, not one. If the ultimate truth is one, the Lord, then that means, according to them, the Lord becomes implicated in his creation. The creation is imperfect, so when it is wound up and enters back into the Lord, then he'll be contaminated. He'll be tainted by that imperfection. But this is refuted by Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll read the verse. This verse is worth noting down, at least the number. Canto 4, Chapter 7, Text 26. This is a prayer by Prajapati Daksha. Daksha Uvacha, Shuddham Svadhamni, Uparattakila Buddhi Avashtam Chinmatram Ekam Abhayam, Pratisidhyamayam Tishtams Toyaiva Purusatvam Upetya Tasyam Ashtebhavan Upariyudha Ivatma Tantra, which means, Daksha addressed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, my dear Lord, you are transcendental to all speculative positions. You are completely spiritual, devoid of all fear, and you are always in control of the material energy. Even though you appear in the material energy, you are situated transcendentally. You are always free from material contamination because you are completely self-sufficient. Yes. So you see, although Krishna, he is the origin of the material nature, and the material nature therefore comes back and enters into him, still, he is always independent. He is always svarat. He is always transcendental. One example given by Srila Baladev Vidyabhusan, very nice, simple example, is the example of the canvas. You see, an artist paints on a canvas. So he puts oil, colored oils, on the canvas and creates a nice painting. But the canvas always remains the same. It is the support of the painting. The canvas remains unchanged as the support. So similarly, Krishna is the support, the origin, the support, the shelter of this material existence, but he is never tainted by it. He is always independent from it. So, Vaisheshika and Sankhya philosophers, they posit the pradhan as the source. They say pradhan is asat. You see, we're going to explain what is sat and asat. So sat means the Lord, but sat also means this manifest material world. And asat means the unmanifest state. So the unmanifest material energy, as I explained the other day, that is pradhan. So they argue that asat must be the cause of sat. And asat means the pradhan. But actually, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, asat is also a name of Krishna. You may be surprised to hear this. Because, yes, we take one meaning of the word asat is unreal. So Krishna is not unreal. But asat also means unmanifest. So Krishna is the unmanifest origin of this material world. So I'll read a verse. This is chapter 87 of Canto 10, text 29. O eternally liberated transcendental Lord, your material energy causes the various moving and non-moving species of life to appear by activating their material desires, but only when and if you sport with her by briefly glancing over her. You, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, see no one as an intimate friend and no one as a stranger, just as the ethereal sky has no connection with perceptible qualities. In this sense, you resemble a void. Then in the purport, it is written, to attempt a life separate from the Lord, rebellious souls must be provided with suitable bodies and an illusory environment in which to act out their fantasies of independence. The merciful Lord agrees to let them learn in their own way, and so he glances at Mahamaya, his energy of material creation. Simply by this glance, she is awakened and makes all required arrangements on his behalf. So we explained this point yesterday. The Lord is the remote cause. He activates material nature by glancing at her. And as stated here, again, also yesterday, the Lord is like the ethereal sky, which has no connection with perceptible qualities. Again, this point. Someone may say the sky is cloudy, but the sky is never cloudy. The sky is actually the support or the basis of the clouds, but the clouds never mix with the sky itself. This is a wrong perception to say that the sky is cloudy or the sky is dirty. The sky is never so. So although Krishna, he is the support of the material existence, he is never touched by it. Therefore, this verse says, Asunyatulam darata. You are like a void. Therefore, Krishna, he cannot be, by this process of neti-neti, breaking down material elements that the jnanis use, he can never be found. So in that sense, he's a void. He's unmanifest. That is the sense of the word. Asat. He is unmanifest. So, this is interesting. That this is a name of Krishna also. Sat and Asat. These are names of Krishna, which prove that he is the source of everything. Now, to continue this theme, the same theme, how Krishna is the repose of the material nature. He is asat. That means he is behind this manifestation. And when everything is dissolved, this manifestation enters into him. Therefore, the form that is seen in this material world actually comes about by him, as a result of his own form. This is this, again, svarupena, pradana rupena. Pradana shows form only because that form of the material world is based on Krishna's unmanifest form. Krishna's eternal unmanifest form, which we cannot see with these material eyes. So I'll read some very nice verses. This is from Canto 8, Chapter 3, Text 4. I'll just read the translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by expanding His own energy, keeps the cosmic manifestation visible and again sometimes renders it invisible. He is both the Supreme Cause and the Supreme Result, the observer and the witness in all circumstances. Thus He is transcendental to everything. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead give me protection. And from Canto 3, Chapter 10, Text 13. This cosmic manifestation is as it is now. It was the same in the past, and it will continue in the same way in the future. And from the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, there is a systematic schedule for the perpetual manifestation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material world. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 9.8, Bhutagramam Imam Krishnam Avasam Prakritir Vasat. As it is created now, and as it will be destroyed later on, so also it existed in the past, and again will be created, maintained, and destroyed in due course of time. Therefore, the systematic activities of the time factor are perpetual and eternal, and cannot be stated to be false. The manifestation is temporary and occasional, but it is not false as claimed by the Mayavadi philosophers. So the form of this world is based on the eternal form of Krishna. So therefore it can be said that the form of this world is also true. The forms of this world. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to say that matter is the dictionary of spirit. Just like if you have a dictionary, you have a list of words and basic meanings. Basic meanings to help you understand the English language or any other language. These are not complete meanings, but they're basic meanings. If you want complete meanings, then you'd have to turn to encyclopedia. So matter is the dictionary of spirit. By observing matter, you can get a simple understanding of spirit. By observing material form, you can get a basic understanding of what the spiritual world is like. Of course, here it's very easy because Mayapur is the spiritual world. But anywhere in this material world, one will see trees, one will see birds, one will see ponds of water, one will see people, men, women, one will see flowers. So why do these forms exist? Why are they created, maintained, destroyed, and yet recreated again? This is also in Western, we were speaking a couple days ago about Socrates. Srila Prabhupada said he's the only real philosopher in the West because he had the same understanding of form. He proposed that there is a spiritual world of forms. And this material world, in this material world, we see only reflections of these forms. So here in the material world, the forms come and go. But they come again and again and again, nonetheless, even after being destroyed. So why is that? You see, if there was no basis to existence, if there was nothing eternal behind this existence, then why are there perpetually trees in this world, this form of trees? You see? Why isn't it after the trees are destroyed, let's say in some cataclysm, big forest fire, all the trees are destroyed. So why doesn't some other thing grow up? Some fantastic, weird kind of entity that's never been seen before. If everything is just kind of spontaneous, there's no plan behind it. No, but we see perpetually this form of tree in this world, even though in the material world things come and go. We see perpetually personal form. Because these are derived from eternal transcendental forms. So this is Socratic philosophy. And Socrates, as Srila Prabhupada said, he obviously derived his understanding from the Vedas, from Vedanta. So, let's hear some more on this. There's some more interesting verses. Here from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 3, Text 12. And the purport. We learn that the Lord, He has another name, Otam Protam. Very interesting name. Otam Protam means crosswise and lengthwise. The example is of thread. If you see a tapestry, just like in Persia, they make beautiful tapestries, these big rugs with very beautiful designs. So the basic ingredient or material of the rug are threads, which run crosswise and lengthwise, up and down. And it is this thread that is the support of the design that is seen in the tapestry. So Sri Krishna in His form, we've already heard the name Antaryami. Antaryami is the name of the super soul. Antar means inner. Yami means ruler, just like Yamaraj. Lord Yamaraj. The word Yama means ruler or giver of discipline. So he disciplines all living entities in the universe because he punishes them at the time of death, those sinful living entities. So the super soul is called Antaryami, the inner ruler or inner force. So as Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, the Supreme Lord is both vertical and horizontal to the cosmic manifestation. Like two threads, horizontal and vertical, of which a quilt is manufactured, Lord Vishnu is situated as the vertical and horizontal cause of the cosmic manifestation. So he is Antaryami. He is dwelling lengthwise, vertically and horizontally to this creation within all atoms everywhere. And from his form, we see this design. Because his form is there within everything, therefore, this material world has its form, has its design. So, from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 4, Text 27, and this is a verse that has a direct reference to Vedanta Sutra, we learn, "My dear King, it is stated in the Vedanta Sutra that the ingredient cause that constitutes any manifested product in this universe can be perceived as a separate reality, just as the threads that make up a cloth can be perceived separately from their product." So this is interesting. You see the design on a rug, a Persian rug, but separately, we can understand separately the existence of the threads, separately from that design. The threads are, of course, the cause of that design. But the design is dependent upon those threads. So you see, in the same way, the material world is nothing but the energy of the Lord. In that sense, it might be said that the material world is the Lord, because it is only the Lord's own energy. It has no other source than the Lord Himself. But yet again, nonetheless, the material world is always dependent upon the Lord. So this is the sense. This is again a Chincha Beta Beta Tattva philosophy. Now finally, one last argument. The Sankhya philosophers say, well, if you Vedantists, if you Vaishnavas, if you follow Srimad Bhagavatam, say, if you insist that the Lord is the Upadana Karana, He is the ingredient cause, He Himself is the ingredient of this material world, then what in effect you're saying is that the Lord is His own emanation. So the Jiva is also an emanation from Krishna. So you're saying, the conclusion, the logical conclusion of your position is that any living entity, any conditioned soul, is also Krishna. This is how they argue. So Bhagavatam replies. Let us hear the verses. This is from Canto 6, Chapter 16, verses 9 through 11, which explains the simultaneous oneness and difference between Atma and Paramatma, how they are the same and how they are different. So again, I'll just read the translations and also the purport. This is Canto 6, Chapter 16, verses 9 through 11. Very important verses, because here Bhagavatam is very clearly explaining the oneness and difference of Atman and Paramatman. So, translation to verse 9. Chapter 16, Canto 6. The living entity is eternal and imperishable because he actually has no beginning and no end. He never takes birth or dies. He is the basic principle of all types of bodies, yet he does not belong to the bodily category. The living being is so sublime that he is equal in quality to the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, because he is extremely small, he is prone to be illusioned by the external energy, and thus he creates various bodies for himself according to his different desires. Then in the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, in this verse, the philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference, is described. The living entity is eternal, nitya, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the difference is that the Supreme Lord is the greatest, no one being equal to or greater than him, whereas the living entity is sukshma, or extremely small. In the original verse, the original Sanskrit, asa nityo avya sukshma. So this word is used. Sukshma means very, very fine, or very, very small. So this is the particular quality which differentiates the jiva from the paramatma. So then, I won't read all these. I want to go ahead because I want to wind up. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to the, this is verse 9, 10, 11, the purport to verse 11. He writes, we should also understand that Udasina, neutral, this is referring to the Supersoul. This verse describes the Paramatma. He's called Udasina, neutral. Does not mean that the Paramatma takes no action. Rather, it means that he is not personally affected. For example, a court judge is neutral when two opposing parties appear before him, but he still takes action as the case warrants. So this is actually the answer to this objection of the Sankhya philosophers, the Nyayis, the Vaisheshikas, who say that if you Vaishnavas say the Lord is the Upadana Karana, then that means he is his own emanation, therefore he's also the Jiva. No, the Lord is Udasina. He's neutral. Again, it means he's unaffected. He can emanate. He emanates matter and he emanates the jivas. But he himself remains Udasina. He is neutral. And as Prabhupada so nicely explains here, that does not mean that he doesn't act. Neutrality does not mean that he doesn't act. And he gives the example of a court judge. A court judge acts. He decides the case. He makes a decision, but still he's neutral. This is a very nice example. Krishna is ever neutral. He's emanating matter, he's emanating spirit in the form of jivas, but he himself remains neutral and thus unaffected. And how can he do this? Because he is Vibhu, he is the greatest. The jiva cannot do this. You see? This is in Vedanta Sutra, commentary by Baladev Vidyabhusan, he points out this difference between the Anu Atma, the Jiva, and the Vibhu Atma, the Supersoul. That the Jiva cannot independently manifest anything. Just like if a man wants to have children, he cannot do this independently. Or a woman, if she wants a child, she cannot do this independently. A man has to take a wife, woman has to take a husband, and then they can conceive children. But even here, the children are not their emanations. You see, they did not make these children out of their own energy somehow. Whose energy is that? Whose energy is utilized to give the body of the child in the womb? That is Krishna's energy. What is the life? Where does the life force come from in that embryonic body? That is Krishna's emanation, the jiva. So the jiva has no such independent power. So you see, the Sankhya philosophers, again, Sankhya and these others, because they're atheistic, because they refuse to accept and they refuse to therefore understand the position of the Supreme Lord, therefore, whenever they hear the Vedanta philosophy or Bhagavata philosophy, they always try to understand it in a mundane way. They try to understand the Lord as an ordinary living entity. And thus they become so bewildered. And they give these foolish arguments. So, this is all I'll present today. Tomorrow, as promised, we're going to get into refutations of Buddhism, examining the mental platform of the Buddhist philosophy, which is actually the different schools of Buddhism. There are four schools of Buddhism, which we will discuss tomorrow. And you will see how, practically speaking, these four schools constitute all the thinking, all the ideas, all the philosophy of the modern world today, which is completely mental. At least these systems of philosophy like Sankhya Yoga and so on, they have their reference to the Vedic scriptures. So they're not completely mental. But Buddhism, because it rejects the Vedas, it relies purely on what is called anuman, mental speculation. So are there any questions? We've left some time open for those. Yes?
At one point, it seemed that you were saying it is wrong to conceive that there's spiritual energy and material energy, that actually...
No, it is not that it is wrong to conceive of material energy, because why should it be wrong when that is the explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, the Vedic scriptures? There is material energy, prakriti. But the basic ingredient, the vastu means a basic ingredient or building block of the material energy, is spirit. Therefore, the Vedas, the Upanishads say, sarvam kalvidam brahma. Ultimately, everything is spirit. But there is a difference between the spiritual existence and the material existence nonetheless. And the example Srila Prabhupada gives to help us understand this is that of electricity. That electricity is one basic energy. But depending on how it is utilized, it will have opposite effects. So, with the same electrical current, you can operate an electric stove, which makes things very hot. And from the same plug, you can imagine a double plug, there is in the same plug, from the same current, there is running a refrigerator, a freezer, which is making things very cold. So the effects are completely opposite. But the energy involved is the same, one. So similarly, spiritual energy is the basic building block of both the material world and spiritual world, but the effects are opposite. Yes, and that's separate. Why separate? That we've been hearing. Because the Lord's internal energy, He sports with directly. You see, just as Krishna is enjoying pleasure pastimes with Srimati Radharani directly, the relationship between Radha and Krishna is personal. There is a direct, personal, loving exchange. Whereas Krishna's relationship with Durga, Mahamaya, is indirect, impersonal. She is activated not by the Lord's personal touch, but by His glance from a distance. And we explained yesterday, this glance means the rays of Brahman. So this whole, the background of this whole material world is therefore impersonal, Srila Prabhupada said. The immediate background is impersonal. Therefore, this world is, Srila Prabhupada explained so nicely in several lectures, that it is this world that is actually nirvishesha. The Mayavadi philosophies speculate that it is the spiritual world that is nirvishesha. But actually, the spiritual world is savishesha, is full of variety, eternally. And it is this material world that is actually nirvishesha, without any real variety. Why? Because this variety here is temporary. Whatever you see here, in the way of variety, shapes, form, colors, and so on, you can know it, you can take it for granted that it will not last. And ultimately, all variety in this world will be dissolved and merge into the body of Mahavishnu. So, in actual fact, this world is nirvishesha. Another way of understanding this, Srila Prabhupada said, you take anything that seems to have quality, any object like this or anything, you can break it down, any material object, you can break it down, and then the quality, the form, everything is lost. You just break it down smaller and smaller, you come to atoms, particles, and then finally what do you come to? You come to the spiritual substance, Brahman, Brahmajyoti. So this is why the impersonalist philosophers are called Mayavadis. They're speculating on an impersonal state as the goal of their meditation. But that impersonal state, that nirvishesha state, is just another form of Maya.
And in the spiritual, all the form, it cannot be changed.
The forms of the spiritual world are eternal. They're changing also, obviously, because the spiritual world is dynamic, not static. Not that everything in the spiritual world is just frozen in eternality. Sometimes people posit that. If you say that the spiritual world is eternal, then how can anything happen there? But no, the spiritual energy is dynamic, not static. Yes, yeah, that's a good point. It is irreducible. Because the principle of everything there is Krishna's enjoyment. So, we heard in the first verse we read, Krishna, he has a name Satyavrata, which means whatever Krishna wants is. So the spiritual world is what Krishna wants. Therefore, it is the way it is. And that's the way it is. And you can't ask why. One devotee was pestering Srila Prabhupada with these why questions. Why are things like this in Krishna consciousness? Why this? Why that? And Srila Prabhupada said, there is no question of why. You must accept it. And you must surrender. And so this person was not very satisfied. Actually, he left the movement. Actually, Prabhupada invited him to leave the movement. Because ultimately, we have to surrender to Krishna. You cannot ask, why does Krishna wear a peacock feather in his head? Why not, a swan feather or a flamingo plume?
Usually there's some story for why Krishna does it.
There might be, yeah, there are nice stories and all of that. But this is ultimate truth. Why does Krishna wear a crown? Why not a baseball hat? Why does he play a flute? Why not an electric guitar? You can't ask these questions. Because the spiritual world is the way it is, because Krishna is Satyavrata, Satyasankalpa. That's another. Satya Sankalpa. Sankalpa means desire. Desire of the mind. So whatever Krishna wants, whatever he desires, it is. It's not that it becomes or will be. It is. That's what Krishna wants is. That's the reality. Therefore, he's the Supreme Lord. And we have to accept, to come to that platform of Sat ourselves, of reality ourselves, we have to surrender to Krishna and accept his desires. as being paramount. We have to become the servant of His desires. That is the meaning of devotional service. Yes? Well, you see, Prabhupada in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita says that spirit is infinite. So infinite has two aspects. There is unlimitedly great and infinitesimal, unlimitedly small. So, the Lord, Krishna, He is Vibhu. He is the Atman, the being, who is unlimitedly great. And the Jiva, who has all the same qualities as the Lord, he is the Atman, the aspect of the Atman, or the Self, who is unlimitedly small. Therefore, in the Upanishads, you find this statement, what is that? Anoraniyan mahato mahiyan atmasya jantur nihito guhayan, which says the Atman is both Anu and Mahat. He's both atomic, infinitesimal, and the greatest of the great. The one Self. So the Jiva is also non-different from Krishna. You see. So, but the Jiva has the power of independence. So when the Jiva tries to become independent, tries to become actually the Lord Himself, then he falls down. Then his difference, the difference between Jiva and the Lord is accented, because Maya comes between and cuts off his relationship. Yeah, well, this is an, you see, this is given, this 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair, is given in the Upanishads. Prabhupada explained in a lecture to demonstrate to us that it is impossible to calculate the size of the soul because it is infinitesimally small. Prabhupada in the lecture explained, you take a hair, take the tip of a hair, divide it, see if you can divide it even into 100 parts, and then take one of those 100 parts and see if you can divide that into 100 parts. Now maybe, you see, you have to understand that we have to keep in mind that the Upanishads were written for persons of the Vedic culture who had better things to do than to invent instruments that could actually divide a hair tip into 1/10,000 parts. Maybe now there are devices that can do that. And some scientists will come very proudly and say, here I have 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. Do you really mean to tell me that this is the size of the soul? But that's not the point. The point is that it is infinitely small. And to help us understand how small it is, this example, which for Vedic culture is ridiculous, you know, someone dividing a hair into 100 parts, and then again, it is given like that. You understand? No. Think of the example of the spark and the fire. This also pertains to size. The spark and the big fire have the same quality, heat and light. But because a spark is small, when it is separated from the fire, it loses its brilliance. You see? If it falls onto the dry earth, it will go out. It will not anymore exhibit heat and light. But if the spark remains within the fire, then it glows and dances. Yes. Because it is small. Another example, simple example Prabhupada gives, is the sun being covered by clouds. The sun is never covered by clouds. But we see that way because we are so small. It again comes down to this point of perspective. Just like the perspective of saying the cloud, the sky is cloudy or the sky is dirty. It's the same thing. Because of this perspective we have as jivas, we're very, very small, very, very insignificant. Therefore, we see things that way. Well, you know, when referring to the Bhagavatam, you have to refer to Srila Prabhupada's translation and his purport. So here, Shukshma is translated as being, Shukshma means subtle, but Prabhupada gives a stress to the sense of being very small. Something which is very small is also subtle, can be taken as subtle. So, and then Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport. It's because of the small size of the soul. But you see, the thing is that we should not take the size of the soul in any relative sense. Maybe that's the problem here. This is actually to be taken in an absolute sense. You see, there, as Srila Prabhupada explained, again, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Lord is unlimited. So, unlimited has two aspects: unlimitedly great, unlimitedly small. So, the unlimitedly small department, that's taken up by the jiva. That's the jiva's function, to cover the infinitely small aspect of the Supreme. And Krishna himself, he's covering the infinitely great. He's so great, he's also smaller than the smallest. Yes.
Well, you mentioned how the Mayavadis say that this material world is a dream. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, you mentioned how the liberated soul, one of the definitions is that he sees the material creation in the same perspective as Mahavishnu, that it's a dream.
Yes.
Can you explain the difference?
Yes. But it's God's dream. The Mayavadis take it to be my dream, you see. And that's the problem. It's God's dream. Therefore, it's real also. We've just been hearing that. Therefore, this cosmic manifestation can also be called Sat, in relationship with the Sat, with Krishna. Any other relationship, no. Again, the example of paper money. If the paper money comes from the government printing press, and is supported by gold bullion, then it has real value. If it comes from my basement printing press, it has no value. So that's the sense. Yes?
We just heard Krishna's being a sat. And I want to ask, how is it possible that all material forms originated or they are reflection of
the sat-self and manifest. Yes, the term asat means unmanifest. So unmanifest can have two senses. First of all, that behind this manifest material world, there is an unmanifest cause or an unmanifest basis, which is Krishna. In this sense, unmanifest just means that we cannot see Krishna with these blunt material senses. Atak Shri Krishna Nama Adi Nabha Vyad Grayam Indriya. But these blunt material senses, you cannot see Krishna. Therefore, with material senses, material mind, we cannot trace out the cause. It's not possible. So the cause is therefore asat, invisible to us. Another meaning of, another sense of the term asat is that this cosmic manifestation in the future will dissolve completely and be withdrawn into the body of Mahavishnu. So that stage of material existence is also called asat. The potential for material existence is still there because it is Krishna's energy. But now it is withdrawn within Krishna. It is unmanifest. So in that sense, Krishna is also asat. Because he is the repose, the shelter of the material manifestation when it is dissolved. The design, as we read some verses, the design or the plan of material existence is always there in Krishna's own mind. Therefore, the material world is coming out, or the material manifestation is coming out again and again and again throughout all infinity of time. And it's always the same. We heard this verse. The material world is as it is now. It will be in the future the same way, and in the past it was the same. In previous, that means in future manifestations, there will still be this basic design of the universe, just as there was in previous manifestations. It's not that every time the universe has come out, they're completely different. You know, the sky is sometimes like a checkerboard in color, or, you know, people have feet growing out of their head and ears on their ankle bones and so on. It's not that every time there's creation, things are just mixed up haphazard. Everything follows the same basic scheme. Sat and asat.
Yes, I'm just trying to understand.
Well, just keep to simple definitions. Sat means manifest, asat means unmanifest. Yes?
The soul always staying in the spiritual dimension. I remember one verse from King Kempe just explained one very nice example, like moon is reflecting water.
Yes. So your particular question is, what is the connection of the soul in material to this body? Yes. Yeah. Well, you're right about prana. Prana is the life force. So the prana, as explained in Bhagavatam, is the life force which contains within it the subtle mind and senses. Again, in this sense, subtle means very, very small, or sometimes said to be atomic. Within the prana, or the atomic, you can say root of our knowledge acquiring senses, our active senses, and our mind. All of this is in the prana. So, this prana accompanies the soul, just as when we die, the soul moves from one body to the next. So the same prana is always following that soul, and it is always the root, the basic fundamental mechanism by which the soul interacts with whatever body it gets. Because in all bodies, there are some form of eyes, ears, nose, mouth, some form of tongue, hand, leg, rectum, genital. These organs are there in some form or other, you know, quite maybe distorted forms, strange, bizarre, insect-like forms, whatever, you know. They can look very horrible, but these organs are there. So the basic mechanism by which these organ, these various organs in different bodies are operated is through the prana. Now, how does the soul manipulate the prana? Actually, the soul doesn't. The soul simply desires, and the prana is manipulated by the supersoul, who accompanies the soul wherever he goes. Therefore, supersoul Paramatma is called Prana Sharira. He has a name, Prana Sharira. Means the prana is actually his body. Sharira means body. So the total prana of the universe, the total life force of the universe, is actually the body of the Paramatma. He, because that means that he is actually directing the prana according to the desire, but not only the desire, also the karma. You see, this shows the living entity is not independent in the exercising of his desire. He may have a desire to move his senses in this way or that, but if his karma, if the karma does not permit it, then he cannot. It's like by karma someone loses the power to lift his arm. So he may have the desire, I want to, you know, he feels this itching behind his ear, and he has such a strong desire to scratch behind his ear, but the karma does not permit it. You cannot lift your arm. Divirotru.
Regarding yesterday's topic of between choices of the soul, life, did I understand it right that the first birth soul, so to say, three-dimensional world, material world is one Brahma Loka?
Yes. Well, to reside on Brahma Loka is in one sense considered still to be the liberated platform. Because those who reside on Brahma Loka, Brahma and his sons, the residents of Brahma Loka, are not actually caught in the wheel of samsara. They live for as long as the universe exists. So samsara means the wheel of birth and death within the universe among 8,400,000 species of life. So souls who live in Brahma Loka are actually, you'll find in second canto, there's a verse which speaks of Satyaloka, Brahma Loka, how there are great sages and rishis who are completely transcendentally situated, but sometimes they feel compassionate for the living entities on the lower planets, and they descend. Prabhupada says is in the purport, I think, as messiahs, he says. He's actually referring to personalities like Jesus Christ. So they come down from the Brahmaloka to earth, and they teach some doctrine, some dharma, and then they return. So, although they live on a planet within the material world, they're still considered to be liberated souls, like the four Kumaras. So at the time of devastation of the universe, they only die in the sense of they give up their prakriti bodies, the bodies within the material universe, but their consciousness is not broken, and they go back to Mahavishnu consciously. That's why it's explained that the mystic yogis who follow the path of yoga called Brahmapanta, path of elevation, which we will be talking about in, I think maybe day after tomorrow, last day of the seminar, or the Devayana Panta, it has different names. These mystic yogis, they ascend to the Brahma Loka, and when the universe dissolves, they merge into the body of Lord Brahma by their meditation, and they take a kind of free ride with him back to Mahavishnu. So on Brahma's coattails, they go to Mahavishnu. So Brahma's consciousness is unbroken, even at the time of devastation. Although it says he dies. It just means that he gives up, he leaves the body that is within the material world. But he is the greatest of yogis in this universe. So he passes through the layers of the universe and goes back to Mahavishnu. And if he's attached, if he remains attached to his position of Brahma, he can come back again later on. So it's not really correct to say they take birth on the Brahma Loka. We could say they appear there. They're offered forms on the Brahma Loka. At the second instance, when they're attached enough to the creation to choose not to enter Vaikuntha upon their emanation from Sankarshan. So then that's the second position. And if they're, you see, the residents of Brahmaloka, they have no sense gratification. Brahmaloka or Satyaloka means also, it also includes the Janaloka, the Tapaloka. These are the planets of great yogis, mystics. So in these highest regions, above the Devaloka, the planets of the demigods, there is no sense gratification. There is some mental speculation. That is going on. But there's no sense gratification. They're not the qualification for entering Satyaloka or Janaloka or Tapaloka is, if one has lived on earth, to enter there, one has to have practiced strict brahmacharya. Strict brahmacharyas, they can enter there, because there's no inclination to sense gratification. One who goes through life, mind completely controlled, so that it's not even the slightest interest in sensual enjoyment. Then Srila Prabhupada says, just by that, he can go to the Brahmaloka. He's a brahmachari. So he can go to Brahma Loka. So there's no sense gratification. So if one is interested in sense gratification, then the third instance, he comes here and gets a human body. And then he can follow the Vedic principles, engaged in regulated sense gratification as directed by the Vedic scriptures under Varnashram Dharma. And if he follows these rules and regulations properly, then by that he can be liberated. But if he deviates from those rules and regulations, falls down, then he gets caught in samsara. Well, that statement is there, that the living entity, when he first comes into material existence, he's offered the post of Lord Brahma, offered the post of this service. But in another reference, it is stated that those living entities who at this second instance, they become worshippers of the Hiranyagarbha form. That means the Garbhadakshai Vishnu form of Vishnu within the universe. In other words, they didn't become devotees of Lord Sankarshan, but his expansion, Garbhadakshai Vishnu within the universe. There they thought, oh, now I better start worshipping the Lord. Now that I'm in this universe, now I'll worship him. So it is said, then they're posted on the Satyaloka or Brahmaloka. It doesn't say they become Brahma. It says they live in Brahmaloka. So there are these two statements. Anyway, as it is said, like father, like son. If one is Brahma or a son of Brahma, it's more or less the same position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are women on Brahmaloka too. There are stories of stories in the Puranas of the because Lord Brahma, he worships the Mahapurush. He worships Garbhodakshay Vishnu, who is also expanded as the universal form. So he worships this Mahapurush universal form. This is this form of the Lord is addressed in the Purusha Shukta Vedic prayers. So, in worshipping this deity, Lord Brahma has he offers the services of devadasis, dancing, beautiful dancing girls on the Brahmaloka who dance for the pleasure of the deity. But they're not like apsaras; they're actually great sages. Whatever they speak is Veda. Brahmaloka, that's the qualification. They're not talking like the women of this world, gossip about what Betty is doing next door. Whatever they speak is Veda. Yes? Yes. Yeah, well, Brahma, you see, there are unlimited universes, therefore there are unlimited Brahmas. And Brahma may be a devotee, he may be a karmi, he may be a jnani. Karmi in the sense of that is his interest in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. Or his interest may be in the Jnanakanda section, his own interest. Or he may be a devotee. It's not that necessarily every Brahma in every universe is a pure bhakta. Of course, to become Brahma you must be some kind of bhakta, but it might be jnana bhakta mishra, mixed with interest in jnana, or karma bhakta mishra. In the Bhagavatam it says, if one follows varnashram dharma perfectly for 100 births, he can become Brahma. So this would mean a karma bhakta mishra. You see, he got to Brahma by that process, the position of Brahma. But the Brahma who spoke the Brahma Sangita, our Brahma in this universe, he is a devotee. He came as Haridas Thakur. So he worships Garbhodakshay Vishnu, but he knows that Krishna is Sarvakarana Karanam. He is the Adi Purusha, the original Purusha. So he's worshipping Garbhodakshay Vishnu, whom he can see because Garbhodakshay Vishnu is his source. See? The lotus flower comes from Garbhodakshay Vishnu's navel. So he has the direct darshan of Garbhodakshay Vishnu. But he's worshipping Garbhodakshay Vishnu in that mood of a Krishna Bhakta. But other Brahmas may worship more in the mood of jnanis or karmis. They're not so much interested in Krishna consciousness. Although nonetheless, all Vedic knowledge comes through them. Prabhupada said, that's the qualification. Whatever Brahma may be, he's the Acharya, Prabhupada said. The knowledge that comes from his four mouths is perfect. So even though he may not be personally so inclined, have so much taste for the bhakti shastras, they still come through him. Okay? Yes?
Maharaj, could you say something about the Vedic conception of the atom? And is it the same in all elements? And what's the Vedic conception of the atom? Because obviously it must be different from the Western concept that it's made out of so many different particles.
Yeah, well, the most important thing to understand is that atom finally means, in Vedic terms, that word anu refers to the smallest indivisible particle, that which cannot be divided any further. So the Western material scientists have not found that. So they don't know really what an atom is, as it is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures. Atom means you can't divide it any further. So that's all I will say about that. Alright, so what is the time now? Okay, so good time to stop. You'll have time to get to the next seminar. So remember, tomorrow we'll get into the mind, which is the favorite place of many people in this world today. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bo. Jai.